The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And welcome into ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol, and we're going to look back on lots of World Cup qualifying for you, starting with the USA's game against Jamaica, which took place last night. It was a 2-0 win for the US with two goals from Ricardo Pepi in Texas. For us was Sebastian Salazar, Jermaine Jones and Casey Keller. Here they are to look back on everything that happened.
All's well that ends well. A nervy first half in Austin gives way to a jubilant second 45. The U.S. men's national team picks up three key points on the road to Qatar with a 2-0 victory over Jamaica. Casey Keller, Jermaine Jones, Sebastian Salazar here at Q2 in Austin. Certainly, guys, a tale of two halves in this game. Let's check out the highlights from the opening 45, which got off to a raucous start just 30 seconds in what many people thought. I think it was unanimous, Casey. This should have been a red right off the opening bat. Ricardo Pepi putting Paul Areola through. Kamar Lawrence tears him down.
Yeah, Areola does a great job, and he just forces the play and gets in. And then this time, it's Aronson does a good job. Finds Areola. Areola puts Aronson through, and then he gets brought down.
This was a little more of a doubt, right?
This was more doubt on the foul itself, right? Now, this is where we don't have VAR, and you can go back. But the referee made the decision that it was a foul. Again, last man, those are two decisions.
And you have to say, like, why is that happening? Both actions go, the ball goes deep into the space, and then we get the chance.
Yunus Musa finding Serginho Dest, Ricardo Pepi, it had to be him, Casey.
Well, it did, and it started. Musa does a great job of just forcing the play, running at the Jamaican defense. Finds the nice ball out to Dest. Dest then delicate pass. Great header from Pepe.
And how good was this, Jermaine?
I think like the deep run again from Brendan, and then he plays the ball to Pepe, and Pepe is there to score his second goal.
No, it's not the hardest goal, right? It's not the hardest goal you're ever going to score. But great goal scorers put themselves in the best positions to score easy goals. And we're seeing that already from a very young Ricardo Pepi, who puts himself in excellent positions to score goals.
I mean, to that end, there's been some debate. Who should be the number nine for the U.S. men's national team? Does that debate end tonight?
I would say yes, because at the end, he has to score goals, right? And that's what he's doing. And you want to win games, so you have to put players in that position where you think they can help the team, and that's how it is. And we have to talk about the quality of him, you know? The quality of him is to be in the right positions. Like there you can see, Musa has space, attacks the space, lays the ball out to, you know, to Dest, yep. And then cross ball in, and look where he stands. He's there to put it home.
And you can't teach that, right?
But he's always moving, right? He's always just trying to find those little gaps. And what he does so well here is, again, he doesn't go commit to anything. He realizes he's in the space. Let's be honest, this is terrible marking from Jamaica for the second goal. But he still has to do a good job to keep that space right, make sure he doesn't run too quickly, stay onside, wait for it, and then finish it away. All he has to do is not hit Blake with the ball, and he does exactly that. Now, to Jermaine's point, yes. To me, going forward, he's your number nine until he loses it. Mm. Or until he has that, you know, look, because you're still talking about a group of very young, unpolished, really group of strikers that have yet to truly establish themselves. Are we seeing the start of one of those strikers establish themselves? Yes. But it's still, the kid's 18 years old. Let's not go too crazy too early.
Pepi, two goals tonight. His prize, an interview with our Sam Borden.
Two goals, one standing ovation in front of a crowd in your home state. What did it feel like tonight?
Oh, it's a great feeling. You know, there's no better feeling than winning here at home, you know, in front of the fans. So, you know, it's great. It feels amazing.
What changed for you and for the team from the first half to the second half?
I think we found our weaknesses outside of the field. You know, we went through the wings, and I feel that's where we found our weakness, and then we got through the wings, and it was important because through the middle it was a little too compacted.
After the up and down nature of the first window, what does it mean to begin this window with a performance like this?
It's important. I feel like we still got two more games left. You know, we got it. We want the 9 points, so we got to get to work.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I don't want to make this postgame all about Ricardo Pepi. There were other players that played well tonight. Was there someone that stood out specifically for you, Jermaine?
Pretty clear for me was it Tyler Adams. We talked before the game, who's a leader, who's a captain. He came here to this game today. He showed up. And you can see how important he is to play in the middle as a number six, because he is smart enough to know when he has to drop back, help the defense, or move forward to attack and make pressure on the people in front of him. I think there's no doubt that he is more important in as a number six than a right back for this team.
So to that point, when you have a great number six that's really being that good security blanket, it gives the confidence of an Anthony Robinson to get forward, of a Serginho Dest to get forward, of Areola to put more pressure. Because, you know, if they do get behind that first man, you know you have that guy that slides over and picks things off and makes it more comfortable for you to get in advanced positions.
The other big storyline coming into this match was Weston McKennie back in the team and back in the lineup after that suspension during the last World Cup qualifying window for twice breaking COVID protocol. Jermaine, what did you think of his performance this evening?
You know, I believe that he can play better games, to be honest. We have to be honest, but I think he played a good game, you know. It would be mean now to go against him and say, like, he was not good. He tried everything. He made deep runs. There he had a chance, too. And, you know, at the end, he helped his team to win today. That's
yeah, I agree. I think he was solid. I don't think he was the star by any means, but I think he did a good job coming back and helping, you know, re-earn that trust from his teammates, from the coaching staff, and from the fans.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the matches that will be coming up then. Of course, in 6 days' time, Costa Rica in Columbus. But before then, guys, a trip away to Panama. Now, Panama has been a little bit of a surprise so far early on in this World Cup qualifying cycle. What's a good result for the U.S. down there?
You know, I always say, go there, try to win the game, try to get 3 points out of it. That has to be the main goal. But if you come home with 1 point, we talked before, it's important to win your home games. And if you get on a roll a point, that's fantastic. That's good. But don't go there and say, like, you're okay with 1 point, because then you play with fire and everything can go completely wrong.
Yeah, I think they set the standard over the last three halves, let's say, of how aggressive and how progressive you are going forward, getting in behind teams, causing problems. By all means, go down to Panama and play exactly the same way. If for some reason it's 0-0 or 1-1 in the 75th minute, hey, then maybe you pull the reins back a little bit and say, you know what, if we come out of here with a point, that's not the end of the world. Yes, look, we'll still look to go win all three, but recognize that a point on the road is not the end of the world.
And you said it. They went to Honduras, and they had a bad first half, but then they played an amazing second half, you know? So why should they not go to Panama and have the same focus, same ability, and same mindset to say, like, we come here to win 3 points. Mm. And if we come back with 1 point, we okay.
And they set the standard. The tenacity was there from the very first minute. Don't go down there and go back to, let's just play nice and slow.
Panama away on Sunday. 3 days after that, the United States is back at home in Columbus, Ohio, for another big qualifying showdown against Costa Rica. We'll see you there on ESPN2. For Casey, Jermaine, I'm Seb. Let's send it back to the ESPN FC studios.
Thanks so much, guys. Well, we can now welcome in Jurgen Klinsmann to talk further about the game that we saw. But we must start, Jurgen, by talking about Ricardo Pepi. He strikes again. It's hard not to get excited about the 18-year-old right now. I bet you wouldn't have minded having a player like him available to you, would you?
I think to any coach out there, you know, when you discover a kid like him, he comes through the ranks at the age of 18 and shows so much potential. He shows so much quality already in his game. You know, he knows exactly how to time his runs. He knows to be at the right place at the right time. And he's clinical, finishing it off. I mean, he's not hesitating. He doesn't have two thoughts in his mind. He knows exactly what he wants to do. And this is very, very exciting for the U.S. Men's National Team, because obviously, he can only get better. He's 18. He can only grow. He can only get better. And I mean, the sky is the limit for the kid. So let's be excited. I mean, I think that we have all the right in the world to be excited when a player like him show his quality.
They're talking about the number nine, then the guys. Mm-hmm. Is he the guy to be knocking off the perch right now?
Right now, absolutely. Absolutely he is. And we should not be afraid of looking at Ricardo Pepi and saying, yeah, let's get excited. Now, let's get excited, but be calm. Can we do that? Is that an oxymoron? All I would tell you is this. Get excited about Ricardo Pepi because you're finding somebody who actually puts the ball in the back of the net and whose obsession is to score goals, whose only mindset is to be inside the 18-yard box to make himself available. And then once he makes himself available, he's good enough to put those opportunities away. But let's not get crazy and then fall into the Pepi mania and now everything is great because Ricardo Pepi's here. No. Let's go back to the game in Honduras, and let's go back as to what that first half was like and how frustrating it was and how close it was for the United States to be in a much more negative position now than what they are. Back then, the whole roof was caving in. Ricardo Pepi scores a goal, and then the United States go on and win it, and now all of a sudden, you know what? We are the best in the world, and Ricardo Pepi is the best in the world. Not quite there yet. Get excited about Ricardo Pepi, but don't get carried away.
Was this the best test for the U.S. against this Jamaica side, Stevie?
I don't believe it was, but at the end of the day, it's not about whether it was a good test or not. It's about winning the game. And you can criticise the opposition, and you can say that the U.S. weren't at their flying best. Mm-hmm. But you know what? In the middle of a qualifying campaign, there's only one thing that matters, and that's getting the 3 points. It's winning the game. Now, when you can win the game and there emerges a young kid, then that's even better. So you're kind of looking to, where's the little cream on the top of anyone? And in this particular occasion, you've got a young kid who, no question, has to start the next game because of what he did in this game.
And the other thing that helps out, I think, Ricardo Pepi and his movement inside the 18-yard box is the level of activity around him. So when you see Brendan Aaronson running out of the midfield, then that gives this team something different. That gives this team dynamic movement in the final third, which then allows Ricardo Pepi to take those positions inside the 18-yard box because there are guys that are willing to run beyond him and get in positions where now they can provide service and he can finish those services. Now,
Jürgen, were you impressed when you're talking about players like Aaronson here? There's no Gio Reyna, no Christian Pulisic, that the U.S. was still able to come through and win this game and show that they do have other options.
Yeah, and this is the exciting part. I mean, the moment, Christian Pulisic is missing, John Brooks was missing, Giovanni Reyna was missing, and then still there are players in that group now. They know how to step it up. Obviously, the leadership is a bit down than to Tyler Adams and Ovester McKinney yesterday, but other ones like Aronson, they know when to step it up, and they have already experience on a club level. And this group of players, they will only grow. They grow from game to game. Still, obviously, it's a melting pot, and the real measurement comes then in 14 months down the road in Qatar. But it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see that 18-year-old kids, step up and are confident enough to prove what they have. And I think it looks very, very promising.
Jürgen, there's a lot of talk now about Ricardo Pepi's future. As you say, he's just 18 years old. Where do you think would be a good next step for him to help with his progression as a player?
Well, I think every person and every player is different, and every environment is different. I think he's in a very good place at the moment at FC Dallas. And so there is enough space for him to grow still over the next couple of years in MLS, no problem. Obviously, if he continues like that and scoring at the national team level more goals, then there will be interest definitely from Europe and maybe the opportunity for him to go. Again, that decision is not an easy one because sometimes for 18, 19, 20-year-old, it's better to stay home for the time being just to mature a little bit more. And other ones, they are ready to go. They can do it at 18, 19 and live in another country, maybe have to learn another language and socially kind of adapt themselves in a different place. So it's down to his family. It's down to himself. It's down, obviously, to FC Dallas, what they want to do. But to have just a player like him with those characteristics that we just talked about is something very special.
Yeah, so it's a good start in the most recent window of World Cup qualifying for the U.S. They're up next. Panama away. They were in action against El Salvador. We heard Sebi talking about how Panama could prove to be a test. Well, in this game, it wasn't to be their night. This is what happened here. Ball comes through to Enrico Hernandez. Manages to put in the rebound. 1-0 El Salvador lead.
Yeah, he does well. You know, after the first strike, he could very easily have just shut down, but he doesn't. He follows it in, and that's a good finish in the bottom corner.
So the talk, Ale, is of needing 7 points from these three games. Obviously, the US have already got three of those. Can they go on and do that? Do you see any problems for them?
It's tricky going away in CONCACAF. That has been mentioned time and time and time again. But to me, for the United States, it's about attitude. It's about intensity and energy when they play and the pace with which they play. If they show the sort of vertical movement that they showed last night against Jamaica, the willingness to run in behind, to test the back line, to then pass the ball forward and then sideways and back, then the United States should not have an issue. But if you allow Panama to get on top of you and you allow Panama to now all of a sudden take control of the game because you're passive with your possession, because you're not really threatening, then you're asking for trouble.
So that game is coming up next. Then they've got Costa Rica away, and that would round out the window. Ale just mentioned the verticality there. That's something that Greg Berhalter has spoken about the US needing to play with more. And as you saw, much better from them last night. It's USA against Costa Rica coming up on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. You can catch that match on ESPN2.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It was quite a shock for Germany because Romania went ahead in the ninth minute. They had to come back in the second half in this game, but Thomas Müller got the winner. It was his 40th international goal. It came in the 81st minute. It gave Germany the 2-1 win. Jürgen Klinsmann joins us now as we look back on everything there. There was some tense moments in that first half for Germany, Jürgen.
Yeah, it kind of reminded you a little bit about the game against North Macedonia that they surprisingly lost at home. But thankfully, you know, they cleaned things up in the second half, and I think they deserved it. I mean, they showed good spirit. I mean, it was a nice opening goal from Hagi. Obviously, that surprised them a little bit. But then Germany really, I mean, they controlled the entire game. I think that we saw it just now, 77%. Possession. That means Romania pretty much kind of just defended, parked the bus in front of the goal, and Germany tried to create an opportunity. It's very difficult when you have basically nine players just waiting for you in front of the goal. So they didn't create too many 100% chances, but the few chances that they had, then at the end of the day, starting with Serge Gnabry, who scored then the equalizer, and then obviously Thomas Müller, when he comes in, you know, it's just his attitude, it's his instinct that he brings to the table. He knows where to be at the right time, in the right spot, and he just then put in the second goal. It looks kind of a lot tighter with a 2-1, but I think it was a clear story there that Germany totally deserved to win that game.
And they're almost there now with that win. They've almost secured World Cup qualification. Are they contenders next year in 2022?
Well, Germany by law has to be contenders. it's just the way it is. I mean, no matter if they have a good team, a bad team, a young team, an old team, whatever, whoever goes to a World Cup for Germany has to deliver. They have to go to the World Cup and try to win it. Obviously, there are other big nations. They have a certain word to talk as well. But the expectations for Germany are simply as that. You know, you go to a World Cup and you try to win it. I think the team develops well. I mean, there's a lot of young talent, so-called young talent. Some of them are not that young anymore, like a Kimmich or a Gnabry or a Sané and a Goretzka. So I think kind of the skeleton looks good. You have still Manuel Neuer usually in goal there with his experience. Here and there, they have to make some changes in the back line. They're still experimenting on the fullback positions. But I think overall, it looks like a very strong roster. I think their European Championship was not as bad, even if they lost already in the round of 16 to England. They could have also won this game. It was a 50-50 game. So, no, when they once they qualified, their message is clear from the German fans is go to Qatar and get the trophy home.
What did you make of Germany tonight, Stevie?
I think it's very difficult to sum a team up when basically they spend the majority of the game on the edge of the opposition box. Mm-hmm. Yes, on paper, they've got better players and Romania really were there for the taking. But when anybody gets a goal against you and fights for dear life to hold on to it, then you're going to have to either smash them open or get a little bit of a break. And they got both of those with the goals. They got a break with the second goal with Müller and Gnabry smashed the ball in the back of the net for the first. But it's tough to say anything about Germany because, as I say, they weren't tested defensively and you had to break down, what, Jürgen said 9 men behind the ball, try 10. So, yeah, you can't really judge on how they would perform against one of the bigger nations on this performance because it was a case of when they were going to score.
And yet they've certainly got the right players in there, surely, Ale?
Well, they have the names, yes. I don't know that they have the history of success with this group of names, though, that you can rely upon and say, you know what, yes, Qatar 2022, Germany should be one of the favorites. They are, as Jürgen points it out, by law, one of the favorites, because traditionally, Germany is always there or thereabouts. But that last World Cup was not the case for Germany. And the last Euros was not the case for Germany. And that is the group of players that is going to be around next year. And so the questions remain as to whether this group of players is good enough to be indeed a contender. So if we look at history of Germany, we say, yes, sure, they should be a contender. When we look at the immediate history of this German national team, then you have to say, I'm not so sure. Because then you have to ask the very same questions. Timo Werner, is he going to score the big goals? He's not scoring the big goals for Chelsea, so he's going to score the big goals for Germany. Where exactly is the other option? Are you still dependent on Thomas Müller? As great a player as he is, I think it's a referendum on Germany, the fact that you depend on Thomas Müller coming off the bench, scoring a goal for you to win a game against Romania at home. A stronger version of Germany should not suffer like this against Romania. And to me, Germany, as much as I like them and the way they play, this group hasn't proven that they're strong enough to win the whole thing.
Yeah, well, the good news is we will get another look at them in this window. Jürgen Klinsmann joining us for this segment. Thank you so much for being with us on ESPN FC. Let's continue to then look at the standings. And we've got Germany at the top now. And yes, it is very close for them, as you can see, leading 6 points on North Macedonia. That's who they face next if they beat them on Monday. And if Armenia below them fail to win in Romania, then Germany will win the group and they will qualify for Qatar 2022. This is Group E, where we saw the Czech Republic and Wales in action today. Both sides came into it close to one another in terms of points, but it finished 2-2. It was an entertaining night, attacking football from both sides, just an entertaining draw in the end as that one finished 2-2. And that's what we saw there. Stevie, what did you make of that game?
It actually could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Wales took the lead, then they got pegged back, and then they went behind. And as soon as they go behind, you think, oh, away from home against a good side in the Czech Republic, you think that it's done. But I tell you what, they came back, they showed some guts, they certainly showed some desire, and I think deservedly took a point.
And it's not just that they went behind in the game, Stevie. is how they went behind.
Well, the second goal.
I mean, it's one thing to give up a goal, and this was a soft goal by Danny Ward initially, the first goal for the Czech Republic. But the second goal, my goodness, Aaron Ramsey plays the ball back to Danny Ward, and you're thinking, okay, no problem, no pressure here, no issues, we're going to play out of the back, and then, mommy! Mommy! Catastrophic from Danny Ward, it's inexcusable. And then you have to somehow.
Come on, he's a little unfortunate.
He was given a lot of support by his teammates.
What?
Come on.
What?
Come on.
Unfortunate.
It gets a bauble.
Catastrophic deluxe royale. But what you like from Wales is the fact that there was indeed a reaction, because when you suffer a goal like that, the natural reaction for the team would be for your shoulders to go down and say, my goodness, it's not our night. However, you saw from Wales that actually they became even more dangerous after the goal. Daniel James scores the game-tying goal, and they could have won it in the end. A couple of headers there that were really close. For me, Wales, what was impressive is, again, Danny Ward makes that incredible, awful mistake. Whether he gets unfortunate or not, I do not care. That was awful. And so what do you do as a team? And Wales were able to come back and get a point.
I think it's interesting that everybody, including us, probably think it's Gareth Bale and 10 others. Mm. And the fact that he wasn't here in this game, and the fact that they were in the game the whole time, away from home, go behind and come back, tells you that it's not a one-man team. This is a team. This is a team that has so many different parts, but when you put them all together, they become one, no question.
Yeah, I think in recent tournaments, we've definitely been seeing that, haven't we? Yeah. Let's continue then. Group G, with a look at that and everything that's going on there. This is a bit tighter, and this one is pretty interesting because Turkey and Norway's draw today was a big boost to Netherlands, who are now clear at the top of the table by 2 points. And that is following their victory over Latvia. Norway second and Turkey 2 points further back of them. So very tight and interesting in Group G. And as I mentioned, it was Netherlands in action against Latvia. We've got Jan Agafyotov here with us now. He's taking very close note of this group, given that Turkey and Norway were also in action today. So let's get your main overview of it. And where are you at the moment, Jan? Because you seem to be on a whistle-stop tour of Europe every time we speak to you.
Yeah, and this time I am at my parents' house in West Norway. So you can see there, I can see some picture of myself or my wife-to-be there left. So, yes, I'm back at my parents' house in West Norway. I've taken down the worst pictures before we went on.
So, listen, it's looking right now that Norway are actually better placed to challenge Netherlands at the top of Group G, Jan.
It was interesting because, I mean, for Netherlands to win in Latvia was not surprisingly. It was Klaassen that we saw here from a Depay corner. An easy goal, but they did have the ball all the time. It was not a convincing win for them, but they more or less had the ball all the time. And that was not surprisingly. And Norway, we had to go to Turkey without Erling Haaland. That was okay because he was injured. But then replacement Alexander Sørloth, he's injured too. Well, thank God we have Joshua King from the Premiership. Oh, he's injured too. And then we start the game like this after 6 minutes. Terrible mistake by our defender. And you can't do that in any football game. And then look at this, Melling to Hanke Olsen. I mean, you can't do that. And Turkey after six minutes, 1-0 up, of course. But this team got something. And we'll see Thorstvedt, yes, the son of Erik Thorstvedt, the former Tottenham goalkeeper. He's scoring again. He has done that for Norway. And he played our Solbakken and played with a quite good system today. He more or less played without the striker. And they call this guy the Norwegian Thomas Müller. And when we saw Thomas Müller goals earlier in the show today, it was exactly the same goal. So Norway did it good today against the Turkey team. We got a new coach in Stefan Kunst. This was his first game. And it makes it interesting in this group. We could expect Netherlands to get away with it. Having said that, Norway will play now Montenegro at home, Latvia at home. And then in the last game, we're playing Holland away. So it's quite easy for us. If we win all three games, we are qualified for the World Cup.
Well, very interesting times. And I think there was a big chance at the end of that game for Norway to actually win it.
Yes.
It was.
But yeah, anyway, we had a fantastic chance.
Yeah, 90 plus 6 minutes, but you know, doesn't always go Norway's way. No. This is Group H, Croatia and Russia are level on points at the top, and the results that we've seen so far in this one, Croatia with a 3-0 win over Cyprus, with Malta with a big win there. No, big loss there, sorry, Slovenia. Yeah. Order that finished them.
I think
Russia,
Malta's having
issues. 1-0 win over Slovakia. Yeah, not going too well for Malta and Cyprus right now. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. In CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, Venezuela lost to Brazil, even though they went ahead first. Sadly for them, Brazil fought back in the second half to score 3-2. And so, Brazil and Argentina, we know what happened with Argentina. They 0-0 against Paraguay, but it was another win for Brazil. Is essentially what we're going to see with the rest of the CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying just going to be a dress rehearsal for those two teams?
Yeah, for Brazil, and let's just go back to that game against Venezuela, no Neymar. And so then it becomes a question, all right, so no Neymar, where's the creativity going to come from? Where are the goals going to come from? Casemiro was also out with a tooth infection of all things, so he wasn't playing. So there were some questions about this Brazilian team. And up until that set piece that Marquinhos scores a goal, those questions were very valid. Brazil hadn't been able to create all kinds of opportunity against Venezuela. Yes, they had a lot of possession of the ball, but it was very passive possession with very little transition. There wasn't any sort of dynamic movement from Brazil. And Venezuela, yes, I would say Venezuela at times were comfortable defending against Brazil. A couple of chances that came from Brazil were deflections by Venezuela, goes off the crossbar and out. That sort of thing was what was happening for Brazil, broken plays. And then you find a way to score a goal on a set piece. And from then on, you saw something better from Brazil. Rafinha was very good. Vinicius had an impact on the game as well, coming on the left-hand side. They changed the way that they played in the final third, and it made it very difficult for Venezuela to hang on. And once Venezuela gave up that goal, then that's it. Game, set, match. You knew that they were not going to be able to see it that game out at 1-1. It was always going to be Brazil that was going to win. The point about Brazil is this. No Neymar, no Casemiro, leaders of this team, and yet, whether it was pretty or not, they're finding ways to get results. And when you consider what Brazil can be in the World Cup, yeah, Neymar is going to be there, and Casemiro is going to be there, but there's going to be moments in which they're going to have to grind a result out. And it's not going to be against a team like Venezuela. It'll be a better version of what this team was able to offer last night. And so, for me, it's important that Brazil just get their 3 points and move on, and yes, continue their preparation. They've already qualified to the World Cup, and it's just a matter of them getting their preparation as to what's going to be the best version of Brazil in Qatar.
But does that tell us something in itself? Because usually these World Cup qualifiers are arguably the most difficult in the world, but to have that lead at the top of the table, can that translate in the World Cup next year?
Well, it's two different competitions, and it's two different moments, and you don't know what kind of players you're going to have available and at what level. The World Cup qualifier campaign is an entirely different animal altogether. When it comes to the World Cup, what you need is momentum. What you need is confidence. What you need is a team that feels good about the things that they're doing on the field, and you need to have a history of success, and an immediate history of success, and Brazil would have had that based upon what they do in the qualifiers, and what they've done is dominate CONMEBOL. So, yes, that gives Brazil a mindset of, look, at our best, we're better than everybody else in South America, and certainly we feel that we can be better than most teams around the world. You have that in your back pocket because you've done it, you've accomplished it. But in terms of projecting what they do in the World Cup based upon what they do in the qualifiers, that's a different conversation.
Would you bet against them, Stevie, for next year's World Cup?
No, and we never do. Every time the World Cup comes around, and Brazil are in it, they're up there as the favourites. And we can always come up with reasons why they win it. You know, we always end up with, well, defensively they might be questionable. But the problem is, when you've got so much attack and flair, sometimes you can get away with your problem being defensively. So, no, you can never back against Brazil. Only a fool would back against Brazil.
OK, well, Brazil did take more of a lead in the table because of Argentina's result against Paraguay. It finished goalless there. In fact, it was the first time they failed to score since June of 2019, but they do remain unbeaten in World Cup qualifying. What were the takeaways from this one, Ale?
Argentina had a few chances, and Anthony Silva, the goalkeeper from Paraguay, came up with a couple of big saves. Omar Alderete, the defender, somehow clears it off the line with a back heel. He wasn't even facing the play and eventually gets the ball out of a dangerous area. Messi was somewhat active, didn't quite have the impact on the game that you expect from Lionel Messi, but the moments that he did appear, he was playing through balls and putting players in really good positions to score goals. And then it came down to who was playing up top, and it was Joaquin Correa, who actually had the opportunity to play against Paraguay, and he himself must have had three or four clear goal-scoring opportunities. And whether he missed him, whether Anthony Silva made the save, whether Alderete makes a save off the line, it just didn't happen for Argentina. Really, the only threat from Paraguay came from Miguel Almirón in a couple of counterattack opportunities where that change of pace created some separations between him and the defenders. But as it pertains to Argentina, they'll take the point away from home. A Defensor del Chaco is a tough place to play. But I think they'll be disappointed with the fact that with as many chances as they created, and it must have been five or six quality chances, that they were not able to put one of those away.
OK, and the rest of the results across CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying are as stands. There are a couple of notable matchups to pick out in the recent round, namely Uruguay-Colombia, with history between those two sides, and of course Peru taking on Chile in the Pacific Derby. What stuck out for you, Ale?
Well, you start asking questions about a team like Colombia and say, all right, do they have enough to make a run in qualifiers? Are they going to be good enough to make it to the World Cup? And then if you're Ecuador and you have seen Ecuador in the past, you think at some point they are going to start dropping points. And yet it was impressive from them against Bolivia that 20 minutes in, they were in full control of the match. They did not give Bolivia an opportunity. And so it seems like for now, Ecuador is not taking a step back, which then means that Colombia has to get points. Chile has to get points, and obviously it doesn't help losing 2-0 against Peru.
World Cup qualifying talk from across the globe over on our YouTube page, where you'll find lots more bonus content too. Make sure to subscribe. It's the ESPN FC dedicated YouTube page. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Ballon d'Or nominees have been announced, and Stevie has been waiting. He has bookmarked this article. Go and check it out over on ESPN.com. Lionel Messi vying for his 7th award. Cristiano Ronaldo is among the nominees. You can go and read.
What about Spiliqueta?
He's in there.
What?
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. Ali is off to find how he can vote for Cesar Azpilicueta to win the Ballon d'Or this year.
No, I don't think so. No. Mm-mm.
Definitely Stevie isn't, but we don't know who he's going to go for. Anyway, more talk about this next time. See you there. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay Murray, Stevie Nichol, Ali Moreno and Jan Agafyortov. These two have been arguing amongst themselves because Stevie defended a goalkeeper today and Ali thought he shouldn't have done that.
that Stevie should not have defended the goalkeeper. No, Danny Ward, that was an awful, catastrophic mistake.
The ball bobbled.
Why is he going with the outside of his right foot as the ball is coming across to his left foot?
But it bobbled.
Okay, and then he bobbles. So, then he gets to the ball while it's on the line, and instead of clearing it, he actually hits it off the post, off himself, and into the back of the net.
You know what, Stevie? Cold-hearted.
Oh, him?
Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know that already.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm starting to learn it more.
I'm a loving guy, Jan. Don't believe any of this.
All right, Jan, we start with you tonight. Jan, what does Manchester United need to achieve by the end of the season for Solskjaer to be in charge next year?
I would love to say a good turnover. The Glazer will get more money and they will be all happy and they will keep him there. But I think that, joke aside, I think that I've said it all the time, he won't be fired by Manchester United's staff or management or owners. If he's going to be fired, it's the pressure from outside. And you've seen that lately as well. He's been supported by the club. You saw Mike Phelan get another contract as his assistant. But I think that he needs a trophy. He did the second place last season. I don't think he will get away with getting closer to Manchester City or the league champion this time around. But I think he has to, but to be realistic, I think for the Manchester United management, he has just have to improve the team. And we can discuss from here to there to everywhere if that's right or not. But it seems that he's the company's man and the company likes him.
Jan, the bedroom that you're in right now, was that your bedroom as a kid, as a child?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I tell you what. Can we see the picture behind you, though, Jan? The one over your right shoulder.
That is my... Oh, yeah. This is my... Oh, this is sweet. It's my wife when we were 19.
Oh yes! So but I want to see it, though, Jan.
We all want to see you. I understand you want to see my wife because she's stunning, but I can't do it now. She's in bed behind me.
Okay, steady. Who were the posters on your wall when you were a kid?
That was, at that time, Leeds United players. It would probably be Billy Bremner and Peter Lorimer.
All right.
Okay. Good taste, that boy.
Okay. Let's see if there'll be some debate here. I'll come to you, Stevie. Okay. Yusuf says, Sancho and Werner are struggling in the Premier League, having done so well in the Bundesliga. Mm. Does this indicate the step up to the Premier League is too huge?
I think huge is the wrong word, but I think it's a step up.
How, Yusuf? Huge is the wrong word.
I mean, there's a couple of other players who were absolutely frightening in the Bundesliga. I'm thinking of McTerian. And who was the other one United signed from Dortmund? Can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they struggled. And they were the players almost of the year in the Bundesliga when they signed for Manchester United and Chelsea. And the fact that they've all struggled tells you that it is a step up. You know, I don't think any of these players that we've spoken about, you can say that they're not great players and they don't have ability. But sometimes when the fit's not right, then it becomes a struggle. And then it depends how strong mentally you are. And then you start believing that you're not good enough. And then you start going down the slippery slope. So I guess to answer the question, I think it's a step up. I wouldn't say it's huge. I just think it's a step up.
Jan?
Well, it's a fair comment. I think that may a step up. Yes, the Premiership in total is more intense than the German Bundesliga. There are more games in the Bundesliga where it's easier. But I also think that Sancho is a young lad. Werner is not young, but you need time to get adjusted and something. Frank Leboeuf has told us we can't say that Havertz and Werner won the Champions League because that was the too easy argument, so I won't throw in that argument. But still, Kai Havertz and Timo Werner won the Champions League with Chelsea Football Club.
I love it.
So it may just be, And while I respect what Stevie's saying, that it is indeed a step up, it also depends on the individual.
Some deal with the changes better than others, and they may have been thriving in an environment in which they felt comfortable. Now they're taken out of that environment, they're put somewhere else with the expectations and the transfer fee, and now that individual can't quite deliver. Now all of a sudden, Steve, you just talked about, the negative momentum begins, and once that starts, it's almost impossible to stop. Some deal with it better than others. And that is not a reflection of whether one league's stronger than the other. That's a reflection on the individual himself.
All right, Ali, I'm going to stick with you. Who was the best trash talker you ever played with and against?
Wow. Well, a lot of the trash talking happened back home in South America. And when you are perceived as being one of the weaker teams in South America, as Venezuela had been historically, you're usually on the other side of the trash talk. But here's the thing. When you cannot win on the field because you don't quite have the talent to compete against Brazil and Argentina, you are very creative as to what you can call Argentinian and Brazilian players and whoever else you're playing against, because you're going to have to win something. So we had in our national team some people that were amazing trash talkers. Players, okay. But as trash talkers, they were world class.
Oh, so maybe you guys would win everything in CONMEBOL when it comes to trash talk.
Yes, except the game.
Well, listen, you've got to win something, all right?
Yeah, well, I know.
Stevie?
I'll be honest, I never noticed anybody else in the opposition trash talking.
You do a bit yourself.
No, not at all. We went. If somebody was going around in a game doing that, our managers and our coaches would be saying, you know what, you need to spend a bit more time on the game instead of your trash talking. So it wasn't something that we did. Right. However, there was a game where we played Tottenham at White Hart Lane. And Ronnie Whelan and Steve McMahon had Paul Gascoigne in tears. He was actually crying on the field. Partly because they were winding him up, partly because he couldn't get a kick. Just so many things. And by the end of the game, I think it was like 10 minutes to go, I physically saw him crying.
Wow.
And of course, Macker and Ronnie were just laughing, smiling.
At one point, we were playing Ecuador at home, and we beat Ecuador 3-1, World Cup qualifier. I scored the game winner. Yeah, that's right. This guy scored the game winner. Right. And so I'm excited, right? I go through the whole press conference, the thing, the media. You talk to everybody. You feel like a hotshot. I get in the team bus, and obviously full of smiles. We just won. I scored game winner. It's a great day. And then from the back of the bus, this guy is named Leo Bielma, says to me, "Gringo, it's only Ecuador, dude. Sit down." It's like, oh.
Taking the wind out of your sails.
So the trash talk wasn't just for other teams. It was also happening inside the locker room.
Yeah, inside as well. What about you, Jan?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of trash talkers. I think that was a bit... I never fancied myself. I think I just didn't want to motivate the players I played against. But I remember at the end of my career, I played in Eintracht Frankfurt and I went home to Norway, and I did a fantastic decision to play another year in Norway. So I came not as a Billy Big Time guy, but I came at least home playing 12 years abroad. And I remember I played a small team in Norway, in our Premier League in Norway. And I had this young goalkeeper. The only thing he said on corners and everything, you're a has-been. And he was going on and on and on. And I was nearly 35 years of age and I wasn't that motivated. But let's put it this way, I was motivated in that game and I ended up with a hat-trick. I think it was more or less the only goals I scored in Norway that year, but at least the goalkeeper made me motivated.
did you say anything afterwards, or did you just let those goals do the talking?
You say it best when you say nothing at all, when you score a hat trick.
Like it.
Oh, you should have sang that. You should have sang that, Jan.
Yeah.
You say it best when you say nothing at all.
Oh.
I think that was quite good.
Hang on.
He's bringing it. I'll tell you what. He's bringing it.
Remember, no more than 10 seconds.
Yes, that's right.
No more than 10 seconds.
Yes.
Could have played many things. Right.
Oh, we got to pay.
Royalties.
Royalties.
Sashi Singh. I don't think anyone's going to be too threatened by that.
All right.
Sashi Singh, LA. Gavi, Pedri, De Jong, Busquets. Why is Koeman's Barcelona midfield struggling when they dominate while playing for their countries, their respective countries?
Fair question, but there's a slight difference in that when you play Barcelona at their very best, right? And it was Xavi, it was Iniesta, and the combination of those players. Their possession was so good that they had to do very little defending. And remember that at their best, Barcelona, whenever they lost the ball in the attacking half, they were so very good with the counter pressure and winning the ball right back and maintaining the pressure on teams because of the quality of their possession. This version of Barcelona is not nearly as good with the possession. It's not nearly as good with the counter pressure. And so therefore, they are forced to defend through the midfield. And Busquets doesn't want to defend. De Jong, as good as a player as he is, he doesn't want to be chasing around either. Pedri is not a guy who wants to defend. Gavi's 17 years old. He doesn't want to defend either. It's not what they do best. And when they're forced over distance to go chasing people, that's when Barcelona struggles.
Okay. Ah, this is for you, Stevie. In fact, I think it was sent in for you. Who do you think is going to win the Ballon d'Or?
Oh, what? Again? We're having this conversation again?
No, I've had this already.
You were so good with it a couple of days ago, though.
Well, let's put it this way. Is there one person that the majority of us would pull out and say that person should win it? I think you could sit all day and have an argument about who should and why.
Who should? Who would you, though, Stevie? It's you. Never mind other people. You. We have all day.
I honestly don't know. I seriously don't know who I really, really think should win it.
Mate.
I don't.
Quite easy.
You say quite
please
easy.
Please help me.
Hello. I'm going to bring
I know Haaland will chase up there, being a top scorer in the Champions League, but it's got to be a Robert Lewandowski. I mean, he broke all the records in Germany. He's the best number nine type of player since Marco van Basten. He will run away with it. If you don't do that, if you give it all the funny votes again, then I'm just laughing to Ballon d'Or. And I take it serious, you know, Ballon d'Or. So they have to give it to Robert Lewandowski.
But what about Lionel Messi?
I'm going to give it to Robert Lewandowski as well.
Hey, me too.
Oh, now you decided that.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah. Messi's
big win with Argentina means nothing.
No, it means something, but I'm just saying not enough to win the Ballon d'Or. That's all. I don't know why you're getting so worked up here, Kay.
Well,
you were laughing about the Ballon d'Or 30 seconds ago. Now,
what is the Ballon d'Or?
It's the award that's given to the best player of that year before.
So it's the best player now?
Well, yeah, and it's how you judge what means the best.
Oh, see, now you're complicating it. Now it's how we judge what means the best. So now we start getting into all the semantics of...
Oh,
well,
big word.
Jorginho won...
Semantics?
...won the Euro.
I mean, Azpilicueta's in there.
Right, so let's give it to Azpilicueta then.
All right.
What?
Because he won the Champions League.
Azpilicueta's where?
Well, why not? Why, if Jorginho... should get it. Why shouldn't Azpilicueta get it?
I'm not giving it to Jorginho. I'm not giving it to Azpilicueta either.
No matter what you say, somebody will come back with a reason why whatever you said is wrong.
So what do you think it should be judged by?
Just give it to the best player. I don't care if you play for a team that wins nothing.
What if the best player's had an off year? Then you still give it to... Is that still the best player?
No,
or are they not the best player anymore
because
they've not had that great year?
You know, it's a stupid award. You shouldn't have the award. It's a stupid award, actually. Get rid of it.
All right.
You like this question so much.
I know,
Stevie.
I don't want to annoy
you. Do you know
Stevie
what it is?
Too,
it's an award.
Friday.
It's an award where people can make money out having the whole thing put on the TV and put together and
nice
get everybody
dress.
There.
Yeah.
You know what they do more than we should
we
have
can discuss
a Ballon d'Or?
And we can discuss
it's just a joke.
Lukaku! What if Lukaku wins it? Lukaku!
Don't worry, he's no
one. Oh, all right.
Just quickly then, what should it be, Jan? What do you think it should be judged on?
It should be judged on merits, of course. What you have achieved, fair enough, check. You should. What have you done as a player that year? for let me use Robert Lewandowski. It's been based on his 41 goals that beat Gerd Müller, which is a quite good thing. It will always be against him that Poland is not the best national team, of course. But I think that it should be based on that. But we all know this is political. And we know that when they take the team of the season, I remember that year when there was only Spanish players, La Liga players. I mean, there's so much politics. And it's quite interesting as well. The player of the month this month in the Premier League was Ronaldo, not Salah. Okay, noted. And then we move on. So this is also a political decision. I think that Bayern Munich will push. They will push for Robert Lewandowski. But missing Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, it's going to be harder.
All right. Speaking of national teams that aren't the best. Ale, what should Venezuela have done to see the game through against Brazil last night? He's been harsh to goalies today.
Hold on. Can you do that introduction again to the question?
What?
Speaking of rotten, hopeless, useless international teams.
I was actually, I held back a little bit, didn't
you? Oh, all right.
They're very subtle but effective.
I see.
Very effective.
I see.
I know that.
And what is the question now?
What should Venezuela have done to see the game through against Brazil last night?
Well, the first thing they needed to have done is not give up a goal on a set piece. You're winning the game 1-0. Brazil hasn't really created all that many opportunities. It's not like you've been under pressure the whole night. It's the 70th minute. You defend a set piece, still 1-0. You give yourself an opportunity. But when you give up a goal on a set piece, where you can actually set up, defend, pick a guy, pick your man, attack the ball, clear the danger, let's get out and remain 1-0, and you don't do it, then you're asking for trouble, and then eventually Brazil took over.
Yes, they did. But don't feel too upset. It is Brazil. They do have great record.
I'm not that upset. I don't like the personal shot that you took at Venezuela there. That's as Jan says.
Two thoughts, don't
yes.
it?
As Jan said, noted, and we move on.
Well, he gave me a great transition. Okay, noted, and we move on. All right, I like this one. If everyone was in their athletic prime, who would win a 100-meter race? Jan.
Ooh.
Of us three? Of the three of us?
Of the three of you.
Between me and Jan, I know that.
I have played against Steve Nicol like 100 years ago. We now played Norway-Scotland in 1988. He was a bit too late in a tackle and hammered our playmaker. So that's against Stevie Nicol, Tom Sundby. But I will not fancy me here. I will be happy with a bronze medal, I have to admit. But
no,
I will
you're
say
just being polite. Enough, if you had to put your money on it, who do you think would beat you of these two?
In my prime, I think I will have beaten Stevie Nicol, but I will say as Johan Cruyff, as Johan Cruyff, if you have to sprint, you're too late.
You okay, Steve?
So you never saw me sprinting then?
Yeah, I'm just kidding, my friend. You were a quickie.
Steady.
You'd beat these two, wouldn't you, Stevie?
Oh, why?
Easy.
I mean, what about my deceptive speed?
I'll tell you what, he would be quicker at hitting the ground than I would be. Oh, let me tell you that much.
Hey.
Let me tell you that
much. If I drew the foul, I'm fine with it. Now, by the way, I had deceptive speed, Stevie. Very deceptive.
It was so deceptive that I've never seen it.
Exactly. Deceptive. Yeah. That's right.
So can we come to an agreement as a group? Who's first?
Oh, how easy.
Stevie Nicol.
I'm going to say Stevie first.
Yeah. And then Jan.
Although my deceptive speed. No, what? No, I'm not going
to. The funnier race to watch would be now.
It would be hilarious.
The tables would just go.
Question, Stevie. Do you think you could finish a 100-meter dash right now? Like, full-on sprint?
No, I'd pull something. I wouldn't be able to do the 100.
50. Do you get to 50?
No.
You don't?
Oh,
you really don't
you,
think you could finish
I did my calf running away from a sprinkler in a golf course last year. And I got 2 yards and my calf went.
So you don't even jog?
No, don't even. I walk.
What about when the shepherd's pie comes out on a night?
I'm already sat in the chair. Yeah, well, waiting for it.
and walking inside and out. I've also seen this man while he's pulling his golf bag trip over himself. As he's going from one hole to the next.
That was a hole. There was a hole in the ground.
And then as he's going down, he hangs onto the car like, yeah. I'll never let go.
I thought it was a good recovery myself.
Do you think you could finish a 100 meter sprint right now?
Oh, absolutely.
In 15 seconds? Less than 15 seconds?
No. Mm. He could have done 115 seconds when he was playing.
Are you kidding me? I got the finish too. I will break that tape. Don't you worry, Kate.
All right, so you could still finish one. What about you, Jan, to end this? Could you finish it now?
In 15 seconds?
Yes.
Listen, I am playing a game tomorrow here at my hometown, and I am so worried about that game because I guess I will pull any muscles. The good thing about it is that I am the host, so I can do whatever I want, but I can't hide. So I'm very nervous tonight because I have to play a bit because I promised that. So I think it'll be 6 against 6 or 7 against 7. Maybe I pick a goal without offside or something. My dad is the referee. So I mean, I got a lot of advantages, but I'm very nervous at the moment.
You do? I do like that line. I am the host, so I can do whatever
Jan,
I want.
Jan, I've got the answer for you.
Go on.
Yeah.
Do what Kenny did. I played in a testimonial game at Anfield with Kenny Dalglish and his wife, Marina. And what Kenny did was, as he brought himself on 20 minutes into the game and took himself off just before half time, 15 minutes maybe. And then he did the same in the second half. He brought himself on 15 minutes, took himself back off again.
And standing ovation.
Not only did he actually play, he said he would play, he made his commitment. But he got two standing ovations in each half. Because he got one when he came on, and he got one when he came off. And then when he came on the second half, he got one. And then when he came off again, he got another one. Yeah. And at the end of the game, he got another one.
So he got five.
Anyway. He got five standing ovations because at the end of the game, he was out giving it all up.
Love it. Nice.
So, thank you, Stevie.
There you go, Jan.
Thank you, Stevie, to name me in the same breath as Kenny Dalglish. I can live on that. Thank you very much.
King Jan's got a nice ring to it. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you so much for your questions. Be sure to always catch ESPN FC. It is available 7 days a week.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.